percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
It's amazing how many ways you can be distracted. And I am, all of those. However, I'm going to try to hold focus here. It was interesting because in the studio this morning when I was coming in to do traffic, I'm looking a little side peripheral view and I'm looking straight ahead. I'm watching a demo of the Lion King movie. So I'm kind of in between, you know, zoned out. And I realize after over several months of doing traffic, and there's this that I can hear the studio and I hear it's this incredible sound that's a beautiful music from The Lion King, and I'm realizing I'm zoned out and I'm seeing something peripheral, and I'm realizing it's the wrong time of morning to have somebody in the studio next door. And everybody knows that there are some studios that have a chill, a cold, an extra activity. They've seen people. And so this morning, I'm he's next door. The guy that we see occasionally is next door playing like he's on the air because it's an empty studio. And of course, when you look right at the guy, you can't see anything. So there I am and thinking, well, yay, what a day for an interview. And the interview I have is with it's the name of the book, Consulting Spirit, a doctor who is a practical medium and practicing practical mediumship. And so that part of it was, it's like perfect timing. So Ian.
Hi.
Hi there. Okay, and if this is one of those things that isn't unusual to you, I just thought the perfect timing was having the interview with you today, and then the ghost, of course, pops in for a little cameo, and it would be, you know, just perfect. So now we're not going to call you Dr. Rubenstein, right?
No, it's Ian.
Okay, just Ian. All right.
Yeah.
So, but if anybody's Googling and looking for the book, then that's how they're going to find you.
Yeah.
I wanted to find out more about your background before we get into the mediumship, because it sounds like this isn't something that was totally, totally off the wall. It's just something you kind of downplayed and walked around because you were going to be a doctor and didn't have time for this other stuff, right?
Yeah, well, I come from a non-practicing Jewish background, so we were not religious at all. You know, I had no religious instruction as a child. In fact, we were quite a left-wing, politically active family, I would say. In fact, my mother told me that religion was just a load of rubbish, and, you know, when you're dead, you're dead. But I'd always had a feeling that there was more to life than met the eye. I mean, from a very early age, I think. And I was trying to think why. I mean, I actually had a near-death experience at the age of 9, which I didn't mention in my book, which I think, on reflection, is quite relevant to my subsequent development. I think it's probably from that, really. But, you know, I'm 64 now, so I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and, you know, boys in those days were obsessed with science and space travel. I mean, you know, they were sending people to the moon, and I was just obsessed with science, to be honest. But at the same time, of course, it was the hippie era, wasn't it? And, you know, we were sort of... I got interested in astrology and all that sort of stuff as a teenager. So it was this weird mix, really, I think. But, you know, when you go to, you know, once you get to medical school, it's heads down and you're really just working away like anything.
Well, and okay, I'm glad you brought that up about the near-death experience, because what I was also going to mention in conjunction with talking with you is the 2017 INS, it's the International Near-Death Experiencer Conference. They talk about spontaneous mediumship, and people who've had that then are a little more connected. And the story that you tell, I think, is fantastic, because as a doctor, I know you were initially worried about, okay, I'm doing this in a practice, and I could be turned in. This is a license issue. Is this legit? Is it ethical? Is it, you know, all those questions. But going back to the near-death experience, what happened? What happened?
Okay, well, I mean, actually, you know, until I had so many other stories to tell when my life went weird, I used to tell people this story. I can't think why on earth I didn't put it in my book. I was 9, and I had my tonsils out. In those days, so about 1964, I guess, in those days, if you had a sore throat, they took your tonsils out at the drop of a hat. They don't do that now.
I had mine out, I know.
Yeah, and in fact, I have to be honest, I didn't really have sore throats. I used to feign sore throats to get off of school.
Oh, that'll teach you.
Yeah, well, there we go, yeah. So I had my tonsils taken out, and I bled from they use a guillotine to cut the tonsils out. It's quite rough. And I bled from the tonsillar bed, and I was swallowing a lot of blood. And I lost a lot of blood, and they couldn't operate until they got hold of my mum and dad. They couldn't get hold of them. Now, I mean, I say it's a near-death experience. I mean, I don't think I was in danger of dying. They didn't transfuse me or anything, but I went down to the operating theatre a second time, and I as I was being anaesthetised, I had what I thought was a dream. But in this dream, I found myself in this sort of black tunnel, and it was like a, you know, those polytunnels. I don't know if you get them in the States. They're like the things you put in gardens.
Okay.
Black polytunnels, we call them here. They got like hoops in them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I was in a big black polytunnel. The tunnel was curving to the left. Now I was at one end of it, and out of my abdomen was something like taffy or molten glass, like a very thick umbilical cord. And I was 9. I didn't know about umbilical cords in those days. And it was spiraling out of me, and it was going away from me. I was still connected to me. And on the end of it was a tiny little bright white light. And I knew that I was actually that tiny little bright white light, that little spark. It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then you know, that was the end of it. So I woke up. And I mean, what did I know? I was 9. I mean, people didn't talk about near-death experiences in those days. I thought it was just a dream. But look, when I subsequently sort of thought about my experiences and did a bit more research after I wrote my book, I realized that, as you say, people who have near-death experiences often then go on to have other experiences. Mm-hmm. But there's an interesting sequel to this. The hospital where I had my near-death experience, which would be in a pediatric ENT ward, the hospital where I had this, I subsequently, about 15 years later, worked as an intern. And I was doing OBGYN, and in those days, if a woman came in with retained products of conception, if she'd had a miscarriage, you used to prep her, call up the theatre, and do a DNC yourself. You'd get arranged an anaesthetist. So one evening, this happened, and I phoned the theatre clerk to arrange a theatre. He said, "Oh, sorry, doctor, you can't use the operating theatre. Now it's being redecorated. You've got to go to the old block." And I said, "Well, where's that?" She told me where to go. So I walked there, found my way there. And as I got into the operating theatre, I felt this shock of recognition. And I actually flinched. Mm-hmm. I was all dressed up, you know, ready to operate. And I said to the theatre sister, the charge nurse, I said, "I've been here before." And she looked at me. She said, "Well, you can't have been." I said, "But I've been here before." She said, "Well, you can't have been, because it's been mothballed for the last 10 years. It was the old pediatric ENT theatre."
Yeah.
The thing is, I mean, that was absolutely weird, because, I mean, all operating theatres look the same. And anyway, you're anaesthetised in a side room. You're not anaesthetised in the main operating theatre. And that was absolutely the place where I had my so-called near-death experience. So, which makes me, again, that was odd.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some odd things intruding into my life.
Well, yeah, you have basically a wider range of experience, or of, in terms of, you know, awareness that this is part of your, where you've been. You had a signature. You left it behind.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got to understand, I wasn't really, I mean, at that time, I was really busy. I was working 120 hours a week. I was losing sleep. You know, I really wasn't into any of this then. But, yeah, no, I had a few experiences. I mean, I think if I got picked up by the CIA and said, "Look, we're going to wipe your mind, but you're allowed one memory," the one I would really keep would be Felicity's Face, which I wrote about in my book.
Okay, hold on.
When my sister and I witnessed the spontaneous transfiguration of my friend's girlfriend.
Okay, wait a minute, because that's a good one, and we have to take a break. Okay, so that is, yes, I was going to start with that too, because that's what, in the book, that's what you say, this is the be-all, end-all. This is the one experience that really counts. So we're going to Consulting Spirit is the name of the book. And hang on just a second, because we're going to take a quick break and come back and get into that. It is a fantastic experience. And for anybody who's a teenager running amok, wait till you hear this. It's Wendy's Coffee House. My guest is Dr. Ian. We'll go with that. Consulting Spirit is the book. And it's really a fantastic story, a doctor's experience with practical mediumship. Yeah, he learns how to become a medium because it's basically in there somewhere. And when he's practicing medicine, all of a sudden it just comes out with the introduction of Grandpa. Next on Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest is a doctor and a medium. Consulting Spirit, a doctor's experience with practical mediumship. Dr. Ian. Okay, and that's the fun thing. When you have your doctor and you have somebody there who's also an intuitive or a medium saying, here, by the way, did you know your relative is here? And that's kind of what was getting you in trouble, or at least ethically, you're wondering, should I do this? You have the information. We're going to come back because there's a story about a little girl who had an issue with something that the x-rays weren't picking up. Okay, so we'll do that. But first, this is a story in the book that every teenager should think twice about. And the good thing is you have a sister corroborating this. So what happened?
Okay, so this was summer 74. It was the end of my first year of medical school. It was the only long vacation I had. And I was back in London. I trained in Nottingham, which is a town about 120 miles north of London. And was sat with my friend Nick in his living room. He brought his girlfriend down from Leicester University, which is where he was studying physics. And I had my sister, who was aged 15. So there were three of us, all aged 19, and my sister aged 15. And I was sitting opposite Nick and his girlfriend, sorry, Felicity. And Felicity was sitting to Nick's left, and I was sitting opposite them. And my sister Bernice was sitting, so she saw our profiles. And Felicity had long, dark hair. She's quite pretty, but dark complexion. I was just talking to her, and all of a sudden there was someone else there. I mean, it was quite remarkable. In her place was a blonde-haired Snow Queen-like being, a female, ageless, beautiful, fringe, shoulder-length blonde hair, the most piercing blue eyes, high cheekbones, and the curious thing was these oddly very thick but distorted white lips as if she'd had frosted lipstick on them. The lips hadn't quite formed properly, but the eyes transfixed me and looked right into me, and I got a message, or three messages, which is mark this, and know there's more to life than meets the eye, and one day you'll understand. And at that precise, I mean, I didn't know what to make of it. I mean, I didn't have time to think. Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah.
It must have lost a second or two. And it was what I call a download now, but that's not a term you'd use in 1974. I mean, who used computer technology in those days?
Right.
Did they even have downloads in those days? I don't think they did.
Yeah.
But it was this message would be dumped in my mind, and I felt like I'd been knocked back emotionally by a white light. I couldn't see a white light, but it was as if in the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when the white light floods out of the flying saucer and they'll go, like
yes.
That, they'll gasp. That's
yes.
What it felt like without the white light.
Okay.
And I just burst, my eyes started watering. I just burst into sort of tears.
Mm-hmm.
At that precise instant, my sister started screaming at the top of her voice, "My God, can you see those lips?"
Mm-hmm.
And she stood up and was absolutely hysterical. And I turned around to her and said, "Well, you've seen it too."
Yeah.
And looked back at Felicity and she was completely normal. But we'd both seen it. And I think if my sister hadn't seen it, I'd have just thought, oh, what the hell, you know,
right.
And moved on.
Right.
But, I mean, that threw us into a sort of shock. My sister was really upset. I thought it was absolutely amazing. I didn't know what to
yeah.
make of it.
Me too. So wow.
Yeah, we jumped into my dad's car because I had dad's car then. And it's now about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And by the way, we weren't on any drugs or alcohol. I mean, we'd never been into that. All we were drinking was coffee,
mm-hmm.
and not very strong coffee at that. Jumped into my dad's car, woke my parents up. You can imagine what they said.
Oh, yeah, okay. What were you drinking?
But the next day,
yeah.
Of course, I phoned all my friends. And my friend Steve, another school friend, he said, well, I don't know what this was, but my next-door neighbor's a medium. He's called Keith Hudson. Why don't you come round? So I came round, and this very strange young man. Well, he was about 9 years older than us, so he'd have been about 27, 28, prematurely balding. Claimed to be a medium, and I thought it was very strange. I said, oh, yeah, well, what you saw was her spirit guide, and he showed me a book about the phenomena of spiritualism. And I thought, what a load of rubbish, I don't believe this. But I knew something had happened. I thought, well, it must have been an hallucination. Mm-hmm. But then my sister saw it, which means telepathy is real.
Right.
But telepathy is not meant to exist. I mean, I was in a bind, basically.
Yeah.
Whatever explanation you took, hallucination or spirit guide, if she was, mm-hmm. That was not in the textbooks.
No.
So I held that with me all my life. And I'd tell people, and I remember long before I got into mediumship, because I was 47 when I entered the world of mediumship, and I've been in practice for about 19, 20 years as a family physician. So I remember I was at a patient's house, and he was dying, and he asked me, he said, do you think there's anything after, Doc? And I said, well, I don't know, but I had this experience. And when he finally died, his wife came to see me and said, that story you told Len, he found it very helpful, because he thought that if his doctor gave it such a thing credence, he ought to have some hope.
Yeah.
So, I thought that was interesting. But of course, it was nothing like what happened to me after that. That developed much later. And I was well into my career when all the weird stuff really started happening.
Okay, now this is when Grandpa came in.
Yeah, you and many of your listeners will know that these things often happen at a time of personal crisis.
Yeah.
And I came from a very fractious family, and I realized that my mother was one of five siblings, and her father, my grandfather, who I'd never met, was a baker in the East End of London. So he'd come over from Poland, like a lot of Jewish immigrants from the ethnic cleansing in Eastern Europe, the pogroms, and he settled in the East End of London and done well. He opened two bakery shops and was doing very well, but he was fond of gambling, and he used to sometimes put his hands in the till at the end of the week and blow all the takings on the horses. So I guess my grandmother, I never met her, she died before I was born, must have had quite a difficult time with him. And I think that caused a problem amongst my uncles and aunts. And I, because I'd been a family physician for some time, but with an interest in counselling and family therapy, I realised that we'd all had a similar problem with our parents, which was that the older child was sort of pushed away to some extent, and the younger child was lionised to the point where it became cloying.
Mm-hmm.
And I something happened in my family that made me discuss this with my parents, and that basically caused me to be ostracized from my mum and dad, which I found very difficult. I was feeling very miserable about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was still difficult to talk about it. But anyway, and I was feeling really miserable. And I didn't actually interview all my uncles and aunts and come to the conclusion that the root of the problem that was actually my grandfather, the one I'd never met. And ironically, it was on the 4th of July, my personal Independence Day, 4th of July 2003. I was at the end of a busy surgery. And surgery is like a clinic, we call them surgeries, they're not operating,
mm-hmm.
but I was at the end of a busy clinic, and I was waiting for my last patient, a guy called Keith Bishop, and he's a PR guy, and he used to be a security guard at the BBC Television Centre, and when he left there, he had a pocketbook full of VIP names. He used to sort of look after the VIPs who visited the BBC, and because he was very personable, they liked him, and he left and set up a PR firm. He was moderately successful, but he was a bit unreliable. He sometimes would miss his appointments, and he was the last appointment in the morning, and I had home visits to do, house calls, and I thought, well, he's not going to turn up. And I tried to sit up and leave my room, but something stopped me. Something like pushed me back down in my chair, which is a bit odd. And then I got a phone call from my receptionist saying that his PA had been on the phone, that he was at the local station. He'd be 5 minutes late. Could I hang around? So I said, yeah, but I'm not going to wait all day. So Keith had ran to my health centre, and he was obviously out of breath. And I had to take his blood pressure, so I thought, well, I've got to give him time to settle down. And he tells the most wonderful stories about the celebs that he deals with. So I let him tell a few stories. And then he looked at me strangely and said, I'm really sorry, Doc, but I've got this man here. He's the grandfather you never met, and he wants to come, wants to speak to you.
Okay, wait.
Oh, my God, Keith's gone mad. I'm going to have to get him sectioned under the Mental Health Act, which means the guys in white coats to take him away.
Hold on.
Screw my day up and his day up. But
We're going to break, okay, because we got to do some news. But just hold that thought, because this is when this guy gives you information that pretty much changed your life, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so again, Consulting Spirit. Dr. Ian, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. And I'm talking with a medium who's also a doctor. The book is Consulting Spirit. And Dr. Ian actually has a lot of stories that weren't in the book now that I'm talking to him. And, you know, not all of this is on the air. But that's the cool thing about this. Is sometimes once you trip the trigger and start remembering, or at least, you know, acknowledging some of the things that happen, then you realize, oh my gosh, I didn't include this and I left that out. So you've got room for another book, and plus life is still happening, so more things are happening. And the wife and kids who are along for the ride on all this that we're not even talking about here, who were also, you know, and sometimes the boys, I think from what I could tell, they were cheering you on, and your wife's going, okay.
Yeah.
Where are we going with this, dear?
My wife is great, really. I mean, she's comes from a Hindu background, so she was much more accepting of this than me.
And she's like, okay,
but
duh.
I think she still accepts it more than me, because I still hold a little bit back, because I've told myself I don't do belief. I follow the evidence.
Okay.
And right now the evidence is leading me into a spiritualist interpretation.
And that is
I think it's probably greater than our minds can fathom, really.
I want to go back to where you said you got that little information, a little intuition about your wife, somebody who would have Indian background, and the name is
I mean, that's weird. Yes, yeah, I was walking down the stairs one day at home, and my friend Steve was hopelessly, I was 16, he had a crush on Shamini Sharma, the only Indian girl in our class at school, and I like blonde Laura, and I was really, really had a crush on Laura, and I was idly thinking, what on earth does Steve see in Shamini Sharma? And who are these Indian girls anyway? And I felt, this is very weird, I felt like someone had come up behind me and put a cloak and a hood over my head. And with that came knowledge that you are going to marry an Indian girl with a name like Pam. And I remember feeling dizzy and stopping and holding on to the wall, saying, no, I want to marry Laura. And when I went to medical school 2 years later, I mean, I got chatting with a girl who didn't look Indian. I mean, my wife's quite fair. She looked more Turkish to me.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we got married. Her name's Poonam, P-U-N-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
And she's originally from Delhi. Now, I mean, if you take the U and the N out, you've got Pam.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that time's not quite what we think, and maybe we plan things before we come here.
I bet we, yeah, I think we do. My own stuff, I do. I know we do. It's not always the big, bold stuff that we see, obviously. It's the little teeny tiny details of you're going to connect here, and this will lead you there. I think that's very
I think I call them milestones, just to let you know that your life has got more meaning than when your head's when you're stuck in the groove, it's difficult. And they give you little milestones, or you give yourself little milestones. Just say, I don't use the term right path or wrong path, I because all paths are the path you've chosen. But I mean, it's you're hopefully you're on the straightest path. but who knows? Sometimes it's windy.
I think mine has a lot of loop-de-loops.
Oh yeah, mine too.
Okay, now back to the office with the PR guy. Okay, you're waiting for him.
So he's like, I'm going to bring your grandfather through, and he said, look. If I say anything, it's not me, Doc, it's him. So I hope I don't upset you. So I said, okay, fine. And he sort of disconnected. He just looked a bit sort of vacant. He didn't go to transfer, but then started telling me everything that had been happening with my family for about 20 minutes. I mean, my jaw was on the floor. I mean, there was no way he could know such personal stuff. And then he sort of he looked a bit dazed whilst he was saying it. Then he shook his head and looked more normal. And he said, oh, by the way, Doc, William is telling me you should be doing this. Who's William? Oh, he used to be my boss at the BBC. When he died, he became my spirit guide. I'm thinking, this guy's absolutely cuckoo.
Yeah, okay.
I said, doing what? He said, listening to spirit. Listening to spirit. Mm-hmm. You mean what? Doing what? Doing this? He said, yeah, you can do this. You're like a guy on the edge of a cliff. Don't be afraid to take a leap of faith off that cliff. They'll catch you. Mm-hmm. Who will catch you? Your guides, he said. And with that, he walked out. And then from that point on, Wendy, weird stuff started happening. I mean, it was like a bottle of champagne had been uncorked, and it was amazing. I started hearing voices that gave me messages. I mean, it was like everything, all the lights flashing, turned on full power, full volume. And I mean, that's what I suppose you'd call a kundalini experience, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
When it suddenly comes through, it comes through with a lot of force. You can't sustain that forever. Yeah, I mean, and eventually one thing led to another, and I ended up reconnecting with Keith Hudson, the guy who my friend Stephen introduced me to when we'd seen Felicity's face change.
Okay, now is that the guy with the alien in his room?
No, that's some... Rubenstein's first law of paranormal is it always ends with aliens.
I know!
Yeah? They always creep in somewhere.
But it's in your book, okay?
It's in my book, yeah. I was on a path looking for direction. I thought, look, I'm getting these weird things happening to me. Maybe I'm going to be a healer.
Yes.
And at the same time, I was writing a piece of software. So there was my hobby, computer mm-hmm. programming. Mm-hmm. So there was an article on one of the medical magazines, which is about software for doing doctor's rosters, which is what my software was. And also a guy who was a healer. And at that point, I realized that, you know, follow the coincidences.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I've got to phone this guy up, obviously. So I phoned him up and had a very strange conversation. This was a doctor who'd become a healer. He said, well, what you need to do is you need to train as a healer you need to go on a course you've got to realize that there's all sorts of things there. In fact, I've got an alien living in my apartment.
Yes.
I was thinking, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. But he put me in touch with a guy who was the head of the Dr. Healer Network.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me to sit in with some spiritual healers, which was interesting, but not my thing, actually. Because I thought, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm heading towards healing, this weird stuff's happening. And people I'd met at various, I had these odd coincidences where I'd bump into people and I'd tell people about what was happening to me. And they'd say, well, you know, you're obviously a doctor and the spirit world wants to work with you and they want to help heal. So I thought I'll explore that. And the healing was okay, but I just didn't feel that was what I was meant to be doing. What I got really interested in was the mediumship. And I think the reason is, you know, healing is a slow process, and you can always say, well, they would have got better anyway. But with mediumship, it's instant feedback. You're only as good as the last message you give, and, you know, you're either right or you're wrong. And I like that instant feedback. You know, you could see that there was something odd going on there.
It's a result.
If all this stuff is real, I'm not, you know, then I'm sure I have a healing guide working with me. I know I do.
Yeah, you do.
But I don't specifically do that. I mean, occasionally I'll do some hands-on stuff. But with me, the healing is the mediumship, really, I think. I'm particularly interested in using that for bereavement counseling and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, okay, and that's part of when you get the feedback, especially when I'm reading the reviews for your book, on I think it was Amazon or Goodreads, and people are like, thank you for doing what you're doing, because when this starts and it just is overwhelming, it's like what I mentioned earlier, the IANS conference, when the all of a sudden spontaneous mediumship happens, people don't know where to go. Reading your book is like, thank you for saying how this can be when it just kind of overwhelms you and you can't look back. There's a story that you talk about the little girl four x-rays.
So I'll tell you that story.
Hold on, Ian, just a minute.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. See, this is the perfect timing. It's always like the tease, the setup, and then, commercial. Hang on.
Okay.
And this is a good story, because this talks about the healing and what it's like when you have an ability to see something that other people don't get, and even x-rays can miss. All right.
Yeah.
Consulting Spirit, Wendy's Coffee House. My guest is Dr. Ian, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest is a medium and a doctor. Actually, he's a very large, extra large medium doctor. Consulting Spirit's the name of the book. And I really appreciate the story, because when this stuff happens and you kind of doubt your own abilities and your own insight, your own intuition, and you don't know, because it doesn't marry with everybody else's reality. And it's like when we were talking about earlier with that alien thing. I tell you what, they creep in somewhere and you just kind of have to go, okay, fine, next. Okay, fine, next, and go from there. But it's real. And so everybody has to find their own normal with this. And I think that's what you're talking about when you say, I totally forgot the NDE.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, because it was no big deal. It was like, I've been there, done that. And
my normal now is very different from the normal I had before this happened to me. If you'd have asked me 20 years, if you told me 20 years ago this was happening, I'd say you're crazy. So yeah, you get, everything becomes normal in the end. You get used to everything, don't you?
Yes, Yes, and then you also start giving other people more leeway in terms of their own story and say, if that's what
Absolutely.
Works for you,
yeah.
you know. This is a story about the real aspect of how this mediumship, how this intuition comes into play. Because
yeah.
you're working with a client and the little girl. This is just mind-boggling how this comes about. So what's the story?
I think the one which is the one with the girl who had something caught in her windpipe,
yep.
yeah?
Uh-huh. Yes.
That wasn't with a client. That was before I got into mediumship, but obviously... they were trying to get through to me. So this was, well, maybe 5 years before. I go to the gym regularly, and I have a gym buddy there called Kathy. I meet her there. We train together. I don't normally go at the weekends, but it was one Saturday. I was getting very, very antsy. You know, I couldn't settle, and my wife said, look, just go to the gym and work it off, because you're looking really edgy. So I thought, yeah, I better go. And I went there, and I bumped into Kathy. And she just happened to mention that her granddaughter, I think her name was Kristen, she'd swallowed the top of a ballpoint pen, a biro pen. And as she said it, I immediately knew that she'd inhaled it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what happened? She said, well, she swallowed it, it's fine. I said, are you sure? She said, yeah. I said, why don't you phone Vanessa, your daughter, and see how she is now? So she put it on the phone. I'd never spoken to Vanessa before. I said, hi, Vanessa, you don't know me. I'm a doctor. I'm your mum's friend. How's Kristen doing? She said, oh, she's okay, but she didn't feel like going to a ballet class last night. And I said, she swallowed this pen top. She said, yeah, she's fine. I said, can you just do me a favor and put your ear to her chest at the back and see if you hear anything? So she did. No, it's all fine. So I said, well, can you get her to run around the garden for a while so she gets a bit breathless and then do the same? So she did, and she said, oh, no, I think there's a little wheeze there on one side. I'm not sure. So that, as far as I was concerned, I thought, well, that pen top's gone down her right main bronchus. That's the main tube of the lung. So I said to her, look, I think you better get up to the local accident emergency department, the emergency room, as soon as possible, because I think she might have inhaled it. In fact, I phoned up the on-call pediatrician and directed her there. And so Kathy left very upset. You know, she was very anxious for her granddaughter. And when she left the gym, and I was in the gym, I thought, what on earth have I done? This is crazy. I didn't even... And she's not my patient, this little girl. Yeah. I haven't even examined her. I thought, well, you know, what? I think I must be mad. So so then the next day, I was in the gym again. I saw Kathy phoned me up, I think. She said, well, we went up to the emergency room, and they couldn't see anything. They x-rayed it, but there was nothing there. And they said she was fine, but we were so upset. They said, well, if you're that upset, we'll send her to the Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital in the centre of London, a large teaching hospital, if you really want to. So they went down to Great Ormond Street Hospital that day,
mm-hmm.
and they had another x-ray, and the doctor there said, well, there's nothing there. But they said, my friend's really, you know, he's a good doctor. He's told us it is there. And they said, well, look, the only way we can exclude this is by doing a bronchoscopy. I mean, they put a little tube, fiber optic tube, into the lung. But it means anaesthetic. It's a big thing for a child. You know, there's no obvious reason to do it. So they said, well, would you mind doing it? I said, well, if you insist, we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to understand this is National Health Service. There's no cost involved in this. Everything's free. And they were so upset. They did it because of maternal and grandparental anxiety.
Yes, yes.
And they took out the chewed end of a biro pen.
Aspirated.
And Kristen had actually chewed it, and it frayed into little barbs, and it got lodged in the wall of this main tube in her lung. And if it had been left there, she'd have had a serious lung infection, which could have led to sort of bronchiectasis, which is a horrible thing when you're older. So, yeah, that was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I didn't know how I'd done that.
Uh-huh.
But I guess I'd been directed
yes.
to go there, because I had a really strong feeling I had to go to the gym that day.
Was that like a bump on the back of your head?
No. That was just a feeling of deep, growing unease, like the feeling you get through a thunderstorm. If you're one of those sensitive people who pick up the electrical activity before a thunderstorm,
yes.
I get that, like a lightheaded, uneasy feeling. So, yeah, that was pretty amazing. But that was, again, before I got into mediumship. But I guess that paved the way.
Yeah.
You know, the experiences I've had before paved the way for me thinking, well, maybe there is something to this, and opened me up to be more open to these things.
And that's the thing. People say you can't be trained, but you did go to great lengths to fine-tune your ability, the knowing, the trust in what information you were getting. You studied.
You can be trained in it. I don't think we're like mutant X-Men or anything. I think we've all got... Look, anyone can kick a football, but not everyone can be a David Beckham,
right.
if you take my meaning.
Yes.
Everyone can play a piano, but not everyone can play it well. I guess we can all do it, and we can all do it better. And some of us have got better at it than others. In my case, I suspect if it's real that it was because I was in a position to help people and open to it, and that attracts people from the other side, spirits from the other side, who want to work with you.
Right.
And you end up having a partnership, and it's a teamwork. You're on this side, they're on the other side, and together you try and work in whatever way you can.
Okay, so now how does this work with your patients, your clients now? Because you said at the end of the book that it had kind of waned a little, and now it's back, it's grooving.
Yeah, well, you go through therapy. How did it, how it works now is, I'll get the feeling, my patients all know about it now, and they're quite accepting. They accept it, and the partners, the dogs I work with accept it. It's quite interesting. People are interested in it. My patients say, come on, doc, you've got that look in your eye. And I say, have I? Yeah, you're picking up something, aren't you? Oh, okay. Maybe I am. And then I'll have an image. Maybe I can pull out an image out in the back of my head. And it's a very vivid image, and it glows brighter and brighter until I give it out. And if they can take it, then, I know what that means. More information will flow, normally images in my case, which means something to them. If they can't take it, it'll sort of fade away. And sometimes I'll give them messages and it means nothing, and then I'll come back and say, we know exactly what that means. Thank you very much. We didn't know at the time, but we can now confirm it.
Wow.
And, I've had all sorts of experiences. Some of them have been, I had one guy called Brian who died on the operating table and came back to every time his wife came to see me for a year, he was in the room with me. And it wasn't like I could see him, but this guy had a strong presence. Mm-hmm. And he gave me information that I couldn't possibly have known.
Yeah.
And it was like he was in the room there, but I just couldn't see him.
And she needed the information.
Yeah, the information. Well, banal stuff like, hello, doc, make sure that she cleans the pool out because she had a little garden pond. And he described the pump mechanism. And I've got no practical skills in this at all. And, a white float had to be cleaned, and he was giving me instructions, and she did it, and she knew what he was going on about. I was just passing the message through.
Yeah.
And then one day he popped up when she was there and said, tell her about the sticks. So I said, and his wife was called Linda. I said, Linda, Brian's going on about the sticks. And she starts laughing. I said, what are the sticks? And she opens up her handbag, takes out a shopping list. And at the top of the shopping list, I can still see it's on blue notepaper, cross through was garden canes. And she just bought some garden canes at the local shop across the road. Stuff like that. I mean, that was so good for her that she actually wrote to a local Fate and Fortune magazine, which we have in the UK,
uh-huh.
And they did an article on me. I think it was the first time I ended up in people have written anything about me. But
okay,
it snowballed. I mean, I got into the national papers. I was on a TV documentary. No, I didn't expect any of this. It was all very, very weird, a very wild ride.
We're going to have to let you go. We're going to have to let you go, but I really do. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and I know that the interest will continue, and I'm hoping they'll do more documentaries, whatever else, they will continue follow up on your information, because this is fantastic. Okay?
Wendy, it's been nice speaking to you.
All right. And then with this, is there a website for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, it's Dr. Ian Rubenstein, one word, .com. If you just type in Ian Rubenstein, R-U-B-E-N-S-T-E-I-N, and you'll find me. There's not many Ian Rubensteins around. If you just type that into Google, you'll come across my website. It's not a very good website. It's not on it. But there's a few articles on there about me. It points to some podcasts I've been on, and also gives links to my book.
Okay, and the book is Consulting Spirit, A Doctor's Experience with Practical Mediumship. It's well worth the time and the money. Just if you have any inkling that you might have these abilities yourself, or you've had these kind of experiences and say, go away, well, maybe you want to explore it, just like Ian did. Thank you. I appreciate your time. And if you're curious, I'll put the links on Wendy's Coffee House, the blog spot. Till next time, there's a lot out there that we don't have answers for, and maybe we're not supposed to. But darn it, it doesn't hurt to question and to try to find some. Thank you, Dr. Ian.
Thank you.